I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
And loving it.
Ain't no use in diving. What's the use of diving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
My name is the Craw.
The Craw?
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
That's no ordinary blazer.
That's no ordinary blazer?
It's a laser blazer.
It's a laser blazer? Do you know what you're saying?
I'm positive I keep hearing it twice.
We're back again with legendary writer, producer, director, actor Buck Henry right here.
Say legendary.
On the TV Time Machine. Buck, in the middle 60s, you co-created the classic TV spy spoof Get Smart.
True.
Tell us how that came about.
It came about because a guy named Dan Melnick, who is no longer with us, who was a, among other things, a programmer at ABC, called me into his office one day. We were friends, and I'd also done some work for him, but I can't. Oh, yeah, he put me on the Steve Allen show and said, look, I'm going to tell you what I told Mel in a previous meeting. He said, what are the two big deals in show business today in the movie business? Inspector Clouseau and James Bond. Get the point? Now, he doesn't remember that he made this very clear pitch, but I remember it very well. Mm. And so that's enough. That was enough. We got the point. That's not to say it was easy sledding from there on. The show, the pilot that we wrote for ABC was turned down peremptorily. The ABC guys said, no, this is un-American. You can't, this. You're saying this is like the CIA, and this complete jerk works for it, and he's got a girl in the pilot that he doesn't know is a girl, and there's a cowardly dog. We dumped the dog after a few weeks of horrendous problems on the set.
Right. That was Fang.
Yes, yes. Beloved Fang.
Yes.
And who didn't really like us very much, I think. But anyway, so it went to NBC instead of ABC, which was a great thing because there was Don looking for a show for Don Adams.
What were the classic elements of Get Smart that ultimately became signatures of the show that you were responsible for?
Well, everything in the pilot was obviously invented by me or Mel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he invented the shoe phone. I invented the cone of silence. Mel named Don Maxwell Smart. I think I named 99, if that's naming someone.
Right.
Or numbering her. and like that. But, who knows who wrote the jokes?
Well, one thing in television that has certainly changed over the years is featured in the following clip.
Pardon me, mate. Can you tell me where I can find Captain Grauman? He's got a very bad speech impediment.
It's Chinese, Max.
That's the worst kind.
Nei de shuang shu bin shi.
Kui do xiang feng.
What'd he say?
Kui do xiang feng.
I think some of the stuff and a lot of material that you did in the 60s and 70s could not be put on television today.
Absolutely. Although I liked all of that. You can't make those jokes in public. In fact, we couldn't. I doubt that we could do the claw today. But then every joke insults somebody.
Right.
which I didn't have a real sense of that until I was doing Get Smart. And I deeply remember, though, a letter we got after the Claw, the first Claw show aired. And some guy wrote in and said, my son has a prosthetic hand. Aye. And I, et cetera, et cetera. I won't be watching your show again. But
yeah.
You can't do any kind of comedy without calling somebody's infirmity of one kind or another into the room.
Because of the sensitivity, a lot of sensitivities exist now that didn't exist then. Do you think it's harder to write comedy in that sense now? Because you could get away with more stuff back then.
Well, yeah, you can get away with that kind of stuff, but you couldn't approach the stuff done today in
right.
television or features in terms of sex and foulness.
Right.
I mean, you can say anything today. I wish I'd collected the notes from networks about what couldn't be said, both right on through, that was the week that was, right on through the 70s for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they would call into question anything that even they would make up reasons to condemn a joke because it sounded like it was sex.
Mm-hmm.
But in my early television career, in the series that I did, just anything. There was a dim joke about... there was an arch villain in a show I did. They called, what did they call it? Oh, Omnus or something, who could disguise himself as anybody, as anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief of police once talked about he had just the villain had disguised himself in a crime scene as a chair, so nobody noticed that he was there. And the guy says the great actor, well, I can't say his name. Playing the police chief says, someone asked him, what was he like? And he said, oh, he was very comfortable. And the censors got on it because they said it sounded sexual,
hey.
Man sitting in a man disguised as a chair.
Hey.
And so we had one of those discussions, those Jesuitical discussions that came to naught. It stayed in the show, but they didn't like it.
I guess censorship always will exist, but it just takes different forms during
Absolutely.
Different eras.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't... Well, you know, the guys who do... help me out, Parkville. South Park.
Yeah, South Park,
the guys
right.
who do
right.
South Park.
Right. Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Managed to get away with almost everything.
Right.
If you can't laugh at their feature, then you don't have a laugh.
Right.
You've got a problem. I guess if you were Kim Jong-il or one of them,
right.
you wouldn't probably laugh.
Right.
Maybe not even under torture.
That's right.
But, you know, they've proved that you can, that times have changed. I mean, their Mormon show, one of the great hits of Broadway,
right.
is something you couldn't do about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Forget 10 years. So times do change. I'm appalled I'm supposed to have invented a lot of the stuff that you couldn't do,
mm-hmm.
but I can't believe the stuff you can do now. And
mm-hmm.
some of it I don't like.
Yeah. Now, in terms of Get Smart, one of the wonderful elements of the show was the relationship of Max and 99,
mm-hmm.
heard here in this clip.
I'm going up on deck. Whoever murdered Inspector, how do you say?
Sahokian.
So whoever murdered him may be up there.
I'm going with you, Max.
No, you're going right back to your cabin. If I need you, I'll call you on this.
The pistol phone?
Right. And 99, please, be careful. There have been enough killings for one day.
Oh, Max, for the first time, I really feel afraid.
For the first time ever or for the first time today?
For the first time since you and I have been working together.
Listen, 99, just remember this. A coward is a frightened man who's scared to be brave. But a brave man is only a coward who isn't scared to be frightened.
Now, that episode was Ship of Spies.
Mm-hmm. Written by me and Leonard Stern.
That's right. You won an Emmy for that.
That's true, because you know why I won that Emmy? Because the other two people up for the Emmy were the same guys. Bill and Sam, and so they canceled each other out. At least that's my theory.
Okay. What was, nevertheless, what was that experience like for you? I think that was your first Emmy.
It was. My first and only Emmy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like awards things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how to get up and sound like I'm in control of myself and witty. So I do it. But it's an act. I don't really like that stuff. I didn't go to the last time I was up for an Academy Award. I knew I wouldn't win, so there wasn't much point in my being there. But still, they like you to be there.
So you,
I couldn't deal with it because I'd been there once before, and it was incredibly tedious.
So you kind of share the Woody Allen philosophy that it's kind of ridiculous to choose one person over another?
We're not supposed to be in competition with each other. It's just dumb.
So what prompted you to move on from Get Smart? Was it The Graduate? Did that cause you to...
No, that didn't come in until I was already doing another... I was doing Captain Nice, I think, another series, another fairly short-lived series, when The Graduate showed up. I quit because 2 years was enough. I didn't think I could write those jokes anymore.
Well, around the time of The Graduate, you, like you mentioned, you created another bumbling hero, which defeated the forces of darkness in his pajamas,
mm-hmm.
as we'll hear in this clip.
Look, it's the man who flies around like an eagle. Look, it's the enemy, the hole, that's illegal. Look at the muscles on those arms, they're like hammers. Look,
it's the nut who walks around in pajamas.
That's no nut, boy. That's Captain Nice.
Nice.
Now, I must admit, that theme song has been going around in my head over and over and over and over for the past week.
I'm surprised you haven't sued.
Well, that shows you how effective it is. They should bring those songs back.
Well, it would be nice, although I'm not crazy about that or any of the other songs like it. I love the Get Smart music and the Get Smart opening. That's about the only one I really admire.
Well, I miss main title designs.
That's true.
Yeah.
They're interesting, often very inventive, and they were a part of, the culture.
Yeah, I really don't get why Hollywood or television has moved beyond that. I know that we're now in the remote control generation and short attention spans and all that stuff.
Well, partly, too, because they want to be taken seriously, even in comedy.
Mm. Buck, what was the genesis of Captain Nice? If there was one.
There wasn't any. I mean, they kept saying, do another series. So I said, okay, superhero. It's something we all grew up with. And I knew where the jokes would be.
Everyone always says that Captain Nice was a result of the Batman phenomenon because it was such... Was that true?
No, because I never thought... I thought Batman was... stuck in a kind of middle ground that I didn't understand. It was neither really funny, nor was it really serious. It was a sort of, there's a word for it now, what is it?
You mean camp or?
Well, it was camp, but
yeah.
No, that's not what I meant. That's,
mm-hmm.
I can't find the word, but I wasn't copying it in any way. I mean, it was clearly built on cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Nice was not, at least in my head.
Were you responsible for the casting of William Daniels as Captain Nice?
I was. He had been in my head for some... His face, I didn't know who it was, had been in my head when I started thinking about Captain Nice. This was obviously before The Graduate, since Bill was in The Graduate. I knew him very well and knew his face very well. But... some years before that, I had the picture of his face in my head, and I couldn't remember who it was. And it was Bill from Thousand Clowns, from the movie Thousand Clowns.
Right.
And maybe he did it on stage, too. I don't know. I don't remember. But his face was there, and when I realized who it was, then I said, oh, let's go ahead if we can get him. Now, this was not the happiest moment in Bill's life. He never enjoyed doing it. He always said, please, whatever you do, don't write me punchlines. I said, well, you're the star of this show. Anyway, so it wasn't a happy experience for him. And he was a wonderful, he is a wonderful actor, and I've always been sorry about that.
I'm a huge William Daniels fan, and my wife loves him. What quality does he have as an actor? It's almost ineffable. I mean, what is it about William Daniels that is just so right?
While we're talking about Bill Daniels, one should also remind the audience that he was the original actor on the bench in Zoo Story, Albee's first play that packed a pile of dynamite in it about two men who meet in the park.
Right.
And ultimately one seemingly kills the other. Two strangers. It's a wonderful short. No, it's not short. It's fairly long. Play. Mm-hmm. Long, though, one act. Which Bill Daniels opened. He was the original actor. And he stuck in everybody's mind who ever saw that. And thousands, hundreds of thousands did.
Right.
What is it? He's very ordinary. Which is, I think, the word you used a little while ago. He is that guy you pass on the street, the guy who's sitting on the park bench, the guy who's everywhere. He's a kind of everyman.
Well, Buck, we're going to have to take a little break.
I was hoping.
But we'll be back in a moment.
All right, I'll go get a drink of water.
Okay.
It's been useless on that point.
We'll be back in a moment with a remarkable Buck Henry, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.
That was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.